Welcome to WorkWise, the growth mindset for wisdom at work. I'm Ken Kennard, coach and chief creative officer at Accent Interactive. My co-host is Mike Boyes of Credo Consulting, a firm that helps leaders thrive and teams prosper. In this episode, we discuss mentoring as a way to develop wise leaders and explore how businesses and organizations can meet these challenges in today's fast-paced work climate.
Ken, I was noticing in your blog the other day that you decided to put down some of your thoughts about mentoring. You know, we've had a lot of discussion in the past about how much learning is central to your life and how much interns and internships have been important to you. And so I wanted to talk with you today about the role of mentoring and internships in learning.
Yeah, well, I guess we've always had, as I look back, some kind of intern or apprentice at our company. And I think did that naturally because it was what I thought made sense. It wasn't really an intentional program or something I set out to do by design, but it felt right to me to always have someone in our group that was young, that was learning, that had fresh perspective, that really could benefit from hanging out with people that were more experienced. So I think that's why we did it.
You know, that's really interesting because you said it wasn't intentional. It just seemed right to you. So it was kind of like it's in the water that of your life.
Yeah. Well, as I reflect on that, I mean, I've had a lot of mentors in my life. I was mentored from the time I was 15 until, you know, I'm still finding coaches and mentors and people that I can hang out with. But I think that's probably why it's in the water, because I'm a product of that.
Right. And so you just keep on doing it.
Yeah.
And I imagine that those folks who you're mentoring and have mentored are probably, if I'm right, will go on and be mentors to other people as well.
I would hope so. I mean, I see the value in it. I think that there's no better way to get certain kinds of both skills and also wisdom, good decision making. And so I've seen that firsthand. So I feel like, why not keep that going?
Yeah, and that's what organizations are looking for. They're looking for creative people who can solve problems and do it while working with others. I'm envisioning it in my head this lineage of where Ken Kennard kind of spawns more Ken Kennards. Mm. But if we look backwards, we might see that really they're not all Ken Kennards. They're whoever your mentor was. Or there's a blend of all these people in this kind of this creative or leadership tree that you've partaken in.
Well, it's interesting you say leadership, because I think that's what sparked the mentoring that I received. The people that were feeding into my life were looking to develop leaders. They intentionally said that. And, you know, if I asked the question, well, why was I chosen to be mentored by you, which I was in my young years, I never sought a mentor in the first, you know, 5-10 years that I was being mentored. It was people saying, hey, I'd like to get together with you. Let's talk. I want to, you know, invest in your life. If I said why, they would say, well, because you have the potential to be a leader and you could be a good one if you had the right skills and opportunities and I want to help you get there.
Yeah.
So I was very much the product of someone else's vision for me.
Yeah. So I'm curious, how did it feel when this older, wiser person approached you and said, hey, I see something in you?
Yeah. Well, in high school, I was mentored by one of the guys who was a youth pastor in our church. And it felt great to be sort of called out, you know, among my peers as someone who had leadership potential.
Yeah.
When I was asked to be mentored in leadership, I jumped at the chance.
Right.
Because I thought that was a great idea.
Right.
And so I felt honored. I mean, and later in college and beyond, I remember one guy who was much more mature. He was very high level position in university and was, you know, came to me and said, you know, hey, why don't we get together for breakfast? And we can just connect, you know, a couple times a month. And I want to talk about, you know, where you're going in your career and what, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember just this feeling of, oh my gosh, I can't believe, you know, he's actually asking me.
Right.
What a privilege.
Right. Yeah. You know, I haven't had, I don't think the mentors that you have, but I was just recalling an experience with one of my little league coaches. I think a guy named Mike, as a matter of fact. And I just remember him taking just a little bit of an interest in me. And I remember my response to that. I kind of found out where he lived. And I would kind of like hang out there trying to get more of him, you know, and there wasn't much because he was a young guy making a living and, you know, and I remember thinking, wow, he lives in this second story apartment in this house. And like, I was so impressed with him. I thought he'd like have more, be more than that. But he was a young guy that married with young kids. And, but I just remember a few of the people who invested in me and how I had a yearning for more of them.
Yeah.
And I still remember them to this day.
Yeah. And there's something that a mentor can give you at that young age. You don't really know who you are. You're still developing. You're still becoming your own person. You're not sure which skills to develop, which ones not. You're even sorting out your own passions and trying to figure out what to do with them. And so that desire, I think, is kind of natural. And I also think it's natural for the older mentor person to kind of want to pass along their influence, their impact. They know that their days are numbered.
Right.
And they know that they have an opportunity to do more by investing in another person than they could do by themselves.
Yeah. And actually developmental psychologists have a word for that phase of life. They call it the generative stage.
Okay.
Where you get beyond when you hit adulthood and you get beyond the production and reproduction cycle. And you start looking back at your life and go, well, now I want to regenerate some of this in other people.
Okay.
And that kind of typically hits in the 40s.
Okay.
So it's interesting that you say that they do that. So, you know, we hear a lot about mentoring in workplaces today. And so I think it'd be great if we could kind of talk about how you see it now in the workplace and what I'm seeing and compare some notes there.
Yeah, sure. Well, what I see in the workplace is that we deal a lot with technology. I see technology, it's great and it's also hard in this regard.
Yeah.
Things like social media and things like the personal computer and telecommuting, these things are really potentially separating us from other people and making mentoring a lot more challenging. Even collaborating, even bumping elbows with each other on projects is not something that I see as much anymore. And so the step between work and mentoring is getting farther and farther.
There's some distance. Yeah, I'm seeing the same thing, you know, and there's a lot of pieces to this. I think part of it is that we just like our autonomy. In fact, Generation Xers love autonomy, and they've kind of given the boomers and millennials the stiff arm and said, I want to work alone, right? And so I think there's that piece to it. I think there's the piece of teleworking and just being connected remotely that separates us. And companies are going to telework because it allows the flexible workplaces. It allows them to save costs because they don't have to buy the square footage anymore, right? And they can hire people from anywhere in the world. My neighbor, was from Seattle. She moved here and she still has the same employer who happens to be just up the road in Kennett Square. And she's still telecommuting.
Wow.
Right. You don't need, and she works with people who are overseas in Europe.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to be in the office place. So we have this distance, but I think there's even more. And I think that technology has not just enabled us to be distant, but it has sped up and made our weapons for competition, if you will, business to business competition, sharper and more dangerous. And so we're working at a rapid pace constantly, and we're separated from one another. And to me, that begs the question is, well, how do we learn? Because people have always and do learn best by interacting with other people through experience. And so I think I'm concerned for my clients, and I'm concerned for America, and I'm concerned for everyone about how do we pass on knowledge? How do we manage the knowledge? And how do we ensure the success of our organization, succession planning?
Do the organizations sense, do you think, that hole, that gap? Are they wanting mentoring? Are they asking for it?
You know, there's a lot of different things happening out there. I think in large organizations, and certainly I know in government, mentoring is a big issue. In fact, there's a real conflict going on right now between millennials and boomers and Xers because they don't understand each other. Many of the millennials want mentoring, but the boomers and Generation Xers don't see it. And businesses are desperate to pass on what they've learned because people are retirement age. And they've hung on because of the recent economy the last 7 years, but they're going to be ready to go soon. And the owners and executives are concerned, how are we going to sustain ourselves if we don't pass on our knowledge and our wisdom about our market and our business to these young people? So they're concerned.
So it's interesting you say, how are we going to pass on the wisdom? It's not just skills. Here's a manual of, you know, how-tos. You're really talking about something more subtle, more organic.
Yeah, it's, you know, the young people always have the skills. I mean, they can learn the skills. They get that in school, they watch it, and it's much easier to understand than the dynamics of the social workplace, the dynamics of the competitive marketplace, the dynamics of learning how to cooperate or negotiate, and how to get along and work with and through people. That's the hard stuff of work. And that's not easily learned. And so that's what you need to rub elbows and need someone to kind of guide you through, especially those nuances of all the social dynamics. And that's where mentors are especially helpful.
So what if organizations are recognizing this, especially right. The older ones that are, you know, can see the writing on the wall, what are they doing and how effective is it? Do you feel like they really get it, or what's the environment like right now with mentoring?
I think in my experience, and I don't have, you know, all the world's experience wrapped up in my head, larger organizations are trying to go at it programmatically. That always scares me. And I've been involved in a number of mentoring programs where my clients or the companies I work for wanted to start a mentoring program. And I got some very wise advice the first time this happened. And my boss said, Mike, mentoring programs really don't work. And I was kind of a little skeptical of him saying that at first, because I thought mentoring was great. And he did too, actually. The problem is that programs don't work very well. Because they don't really feed how mentoring really happens effectively in real life. They're robotic. They're institutional replacements for organic mechanisms. And so, well, you've seen organic mentoring up front.
Yeah.
So what's that look like up
well,
front?
Well, when you said program, mentoring program doesn't work, it reminded me of the one program that I was part of. I was part of a mentoring program when it was a large organization, and it did not work. And
I'm surprised. I'm shocked. See my shock?
Well, so I'm thinking about what were the elements of it? What was the experience like? Number one, they announced a mentoring program. Everyone who wants to be mentored or mentor someone else come to this place in time. We went there. We got matched up. It was like a dating service.
And probably a big response from people who wanted to be mentored.
There was. And in fact, as I recall, pretty equally there. And it wasn't hard to match people up. And so they did. I got a guy who became my mentor, I guess. We did not share common values. I did not feel like he really got me.
Right.
So I didn't feel completely known or understood. I didn't pick him. I would not have picked him.
Right.
Tried to make it work. I'm sure he would have been a great mentor for someone else.
Right.
But just for me, the chemistry wasn't there. And I noticed we started focusing on the mentoring.
What's
okay, we're doing mentoring now. How are we doing it? What are we supposed to do? What do they want us to do?
Right.
How often should we meet?
Right.
What should we talk about? These are the wrong questions. Like, this is how you know you're off track.
Right.
And in fact, I don't even think we should have called it mentoring. I mean, you know.
What should you have called it?
Well, it's kind of like dating someone and then putting dating Philip or on your calendar,
right.
Or dating Janice. You know, I'm going to date Janice from 3 to 8.
Yeah, you say no, Janice, exclamation point.
Yeah, I just put her
Ken,
on.
Woo-wee!
Or movies with Jennifer, you know. But I mean, even calling it mentoring.
Focusing on what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, it focuses on the programmatic part of it.
Right.
And the relationship is where it's at. So,
what would you have want the conversation to be focused on, as opposed to,
well, I would focus,
how does this work?
I would focus the conversation on our lives, our stories. What I would get us working on something. Mm-hmm. I would get us, and of course, we were in completely different departments. There wasn't not a lot of opportunities to work together, actually.
Right.
But I mean, so there was a problem right there. But I would get quickly get the focus on what's going on in my life and right. my work, and what am I trying to accomplish, and mm-hmm. how can his stories and experience and wisdom speak into that? And also, how could I help him? Right. How could my unique perspective...
Oh, what are you offering back?
What am I offering
yeah,
back?
Like, it's a relationship after all.
Exactly. It's not one way.
Right.
So maybe I can do some things that would forward his agenda. But of course, we weren't really working on anything, so it's right. difficult to do that.
Well, let's get a little more personal. So you've had a number of interns.
Right.
Some of whom you've had close, more mentoring relationships with.
Right.
And you know, you run a company.
Right.
And you mentor people. So what are those conversations like? What are you talking about with them?
I try to open up the conversation by saying that this relationship isn't just about, I'm not just interested in teaching you how to do something, although mm-hmm. we will do that. But this is a chance to have input on your whole life.
Right.
And the more you open up in this relationship, then the more benefit you could get out of it. And I saw it from right. my experience. One of my early mistakes was trying to limit my mentor to just part of my life.
Right, right. Yeah, this much of me. Yeah.
And that really limited the mentoring, and it would just kind of got stale yeah, quick.
You're asking a person to invest in you, to give you all their time and their effort, but you can only have access to a certain part of me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That did
date
not
part work. Of me.
Yeah. That doesn't work.
My wife wouldn't like
so
that.
I try to say this is whole life, and this comes from coaching, right?
Right.
You coach the person, not the problem.
Right.
I also notice, this is something that one of my mentors really did well, as I noticed, and in fact, all the good ones, they had a much higher opinion of my potential than yeah. I had of my own.
Right.
They were able to see things played out years in advance, mm-hmm. years to come,
right.
that I couldn't see if I would stay on this right. path and do things. So that provided a lot of fuel
yeah.
for the conversation, because they were drawing me to those things. They were challenging me. They were making suggestions that were asking me to take risks beyond
right.
what I thought I was safe
right.
to take. And that really propelled things.
And that really reminds me of John Maxwell's perspective on leadership. One mm-hmm. of the things that he emphasizes and probably in all of his books, is that leaders see more than their followers see, and they see what their followers are capable of, and they cast a vision for them.
Yeah.
And so what he really points to in leadership is that it's a personal relationship, and you are engaging in a deep relationship. And I think mentoring maybe is differentiating the depth of the relationship in a lot of ways. You know, all leaders invest in their people. All leaders have to see more in their people. But the closer you get, the more it becomes mentorship, I think.
Yeah, so maybe mentorship is just a higher form of leadership.
Yeah.
Or a
branch,
commitment.
Maybe.
Yeah, and it goes a lot more into the person.
Yep.
Than just the right. topic or the project. Right.
But I think what you said was important, though. It's, you know, in mentorship, in order for a person to learn, because really, you know, in my worldview, mentorship is a mechanism for wisdom acquisition. It's a wisdom acquisition system. It's a WAS, one of our WASs, right? And so it's pointed at learning something, and learning is best done by doing and reflecting, doing and reflecting. And when you mentor, you do together and you reflect together, or the mentor does, and then the mentee does, and then the mentor and mentee reflect on it together purposefully. And it's real important that you work that way. And you said a really important thing earlier, that this programmatic mentor you had, you didn't share work, like different part of the organization. And that's one of the downfalls that I see in the mentoring programs. I see large organizations try to establish. They, like your experience, they match people up. They say, well, who are some people who are interested in being mentored? And who are some people who are interested in mentoring? And then they twist some arms to get them involved. Because of course, all the people who are kind of eligible and capable are really busy people, right? Mm-hmm. And so they kind of encourage them to jump on board the boat. But they're in different parts of the organization, and they don't naturally see each other or encounter each other in the course of their work. And they try to establish a working relationship, but their worlds don't overlap a lot. And so it's real hard to make that effective, to make a values connection, to make a personal connection, or to make a work connection. And that's, I think, those are some of the reasons why I'm not a huge fan of mentoring programs. Big fan of mentoring. Mm-hmm. Not a big fan of mentoring programs.
Well, what do you think about skill? Does that play into it? I mean, you talked about values, you talked about working together. What about, like, does it, Are some people just better at it than others? I mean, would some people say, oh yeah, I'll be a mentor, but they're really not a good candidate based on how they lead or how they relate? What does it take to be a good mentor in an organization?
Well, let me turn that question back to you. When you got your interns here and your employees here, did you say, how do I go about this? How do I go about investing in these people to grow them? Is that what you did?
No.
No. And I would posit that's because you've been mentored.
Okay.
And that you're doing what you've lived in. So I think that it's not absolutely necessary, but I think that if you've been mentored, you've got a few steps up to be a mentor because you've seen how it works and you see what works and it's in you. It just becomes a natural piece of you.
So how do you acquire it late in the game if you weren't mentored then?
Right. I think that's a good question. I think that, you know, that generative desire to help somebody is important in a person. And so if you're not interested in people all that much, it can be really hard. If, however, there's a caveat to that, I think that it's possible that if you have a strong desire and a passion for something, and so does your mentee, a person who's close to you, that just by natural forces of being human, you'll be drawn together to focus on those problems and do some teaching. I think for most people, it can happen that way. I think there are some critical skills that I think good mentors have or good ways of being that are essential for passing on wisdom. And there's a lot of research around how we teach decision-making in this, and I just call it wisdom. Part of it is just sharing that black hole in your head. You know, it's a black box, not a black hole, but a black box. And good mentors have a knack for delving into that space, the inner space, discovering what they see and how they think and what stories they're telling and how they understand things, and then sharing that with other people.
And so that sounds like a mindset that they have, or more than that, it's their kind of inner mental space.
It's an awareness or a mindfulness about what they know and how they see the world. And the confidence to just share that with people. I see it's a real perspective or knack people have or can have, and others just think what I have is common sense. In fact, I remember, and this is really isn't a leadership thing, but I remember years ago, and I always tell the story, so forgive me if you've heard it before. One of my first jobs, I was doing some work for one of the biggest organizations in the world, and it was a production line, and my job was basically to figure out how the machinist mechanics operated these machines, the guys who really fixed them and tuned them up as they produced, you know, millions of product a day, you know, even per hour. And these guys just stood there on stools watching the machines. And periodically they'd get out of a chair and pull a tool out and tweak a screw here, turn a nut there, adjust a dial, tap something, and go sit down. And I watched these guys for a couple of days, and I finally said to one, well, you know, my job's to figure out how we can hire people who have the skills to do what you're doing. So what special skills does it take? The guy says, it's easy. Anybody can do it. A monkey could do it. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh. He just put me lower on the whatever scale, animal kingdom scale, than a monkey, because I have no idea what he was doing. You see, he thought it was common sense. It wasn't common sense. There's no such thing. See, most of us walk around kind of in the dark about what we know and how we understand things. I think good mentors are understanding what's in their head and what they're seeing and take the time to communicate that to people.
So it's passion and interest in people, and it's wanting to see those people grow and develop. And then some self-awareness, knowing how they think, knowing what's in their mind.
Knowing what they understand.
Yeah.
And sharing it. Yeah. And another great thing I think is really important that we've lost time for, is a shame, is storytelling. People think in stories. We explain the world away, we explain the world with our stories, our interpretation of what's happening. And you know, in the old days, the elders in the family and the organization would sit around and tell stories about what they did and how they did it. And they, you know, the young folks would hear it 1,000 times. And what was happening in those moments and in those hours, whatever they were, is that those stories and those experiences were being hoisted and onto the younger generation, the proteges, and embedded in their minds as their own experience, because our brains don't really differentiate between your experience and my experience. Once I've heard it, I think it's mine. And our brains don't know the difference. It's just coded in our brain, in our brains. And so storytelling is a grand opportunity for how we mentor. And that goes back to some of our concerns. If we're not together, if we're not side by side, if we're not next to each other working, how do we tell stories? How do I share what I'm thinking? How do I see what's going on and then compare how I see it to how you see it? Those are mentoring interactions. And I think we're losing some of that in the workforce today. And we got to figure out how we're going to do it in the world we live in now.
So how are we going to do it in the world we live now? I read this article that you wrote on your blog about co-generation. Yeah. I was curious about that.
Yeah,
You mentioned a couple things that I wanted to go deeper on. So let me ask you about the first one. You say design jobs for teams instead of individuals.
Yeah.
So that struck me as a little odd.
It's crazy.
Because I can immediately see the benefit of having a team on a job versus, but you know, it seems to me like we put so much effort on the individual, especially in our culture, that individuals have job descriptions. You're talking about a team having a job description. What's that about?
So our modern view of work, as Gary Hamel wrote a book on this, he's a professor out of Harvard. Our modern view of management was heavily influenced by a guy named Frederick Taylor, who envisioned organizations as like giant assembly lines, you know, like Henry Ford, right? Where you make jobs smaller and you cookie cut them and you make them all interact like gears, and out they come with a piece of work. And so people's work doesn't overlap. So it's a very mechanized view of the world. And the problem with that is that people actually stop thinking when they're asked to use their brains. I mean, when they're not asked to use their brains. And the problem of that era of our world, was the problem of management then, was how do we order things to produce a lot effectively, efficiently, at a certain quality level? We don't have that problem anymore. In today's world, the problem is creative problem solving and collaboration. And that's our problem today. And we've separated ourselves. And so we have to go back, and instead of isolating ourselves and trying to fit together, is now say, we're all responsible for the same thing. So for example, if you work, you know, accounting functions, it's very common in organizations to have accounting functions broken down into little pieces where one person literally gets the invoice and they process it, and then they pass it on to the next person who approves it, and the next person who pays it, and then somebody approves the payment, and you're separating all these things. And what's even, you know, it's even more isolated than that is where I'm responsible, or the person's responsible, for invoices from people in the alphabet from A to B, you know, A to C, right? And that's my little pocket of work. And I can only process things when problems come up. I have to hand them to somebody else, or no one else can walk. It can walk in there. So why not? Why not? You know, why not make one person or a team of people, three or four people, responsible for customers A through N, and not responsible just for receiving the invoice, but also for approving it and paying it and getting the check out the door, and holding us all accountable for accurate payments and for the number of things we process each time. And we're all equally responsible for that. So my job is bigger than just shifting this paper from my right to my left. And I learn more that way, and I have more people to count on.
Right? So what's the benefit to the organization or to the customer?
Well, the benefit to the customer, first to the organization is that when people have engaged minds and they have to problem solve and they have more diverse work tasks, their minds are engaged, which means they're ready to problem solve. And all of our jobs are problem solving jobs. The problem is when you automate them, we stop problem solving. And so if a problem comes up, we give it to the thinkers, the higher up people. They're the thinkers, we're the doers. This brings the simple thing, any of the thinking down to people who can think, and they can solve problems where they are. They're more engaged. And when people are more engaged, there's less absenteeism, there's less turnover, there's less latenesses, there's higher productivity, and there's more creative thinking. And so the benefit to the organization is that, and the benefit to the customer is speedier, higher quality of work, better interactions with the customer. And so there's lots of reasons to do it. And you could design most jobs, I should say, to be more team-based rather than isolating them. You know, what's interesting about this, if I can go on another quick tangent, is Melissa Meyer at Yahoo a few years ago. It's 2013. And this isn't the exact thing, but when she came on board as the CEO of Yahoo, she looked around and she saw that her whole workforce was working from home. They were telecommuting because technology enabled it. The problem was that Yahoo was supposed to be a creative company. Creativity is fostered by rubbing elbows and sharing ideas, face-to-face, interacting with people. No one was doing that, and the company was dying, so she rightly pulled them all back in. The way she did it was another matter. But the people were separated, and they needed to come together.
Yeah, she took some flack for how that happened, yeah, but yeah, it sounds like she was on the right track with that. And obviously mentoring and wisdom acquisition could happen more naturally there because mm-hmm. you didn't have to like bother someone at home or message them like right. they're right there. I want to move on to this idea of multi-level working teams, which kind of leads right into that.
Yeah.
It sounds like you have a vision for bringing people on a team that aren't just all peers and at the same level.
Yeah, it's really two sides of the same coin. If you're going to do teamwork and you want learning to be a byproduct of the work, and I think learning should almost always be a byproduct of the work, intentional learning, then you want people who are ahead of the curve, who are further on in their careers, who are further on in their knowledge, partnered with people who are newer, so they can teach them. And the people who are newer invariably have new perspectives that benefit the creative process, the innovative process. And it also gives those older folks a chance to invest. But it's not just multi-layered, it's cross-functional, right? So, but the layers allows the older and even just the more senior people to invest in the younger and let it occur naturally. It doesn't have to be a program. When you put them together, give them common goal and common work, people start doing it naturally, organically.
It reminds me of one of my clients who said recently that when they get a new client, they assign a team of three people. One's a senior person that's a high level. The second is a junior level person. And the third is kind of an intern starter level. And so you get all three team members assigned to your case or your account. And it just struck me how smart that was, not only for them as an organization, because they can easily mentor, they can easily get the younger perspective. Sometimes the younger people have a lot to offer.
Sure.
In terms of skills or speed or perspective, they have more facility with certain kinds of tools. Mm-hmm. But then also what happens 5-10 years down the road when that senior person says, I'm out of here.
Right.
See you guys later. They just move another person in from the bottom and move people up, and they've got this nice flow going on there, and a lot of continuity for the customer.
Right there. Yeah. And what do you think, what would happen for the organization, not just if they didn't just have the three technical levels involved, but they inserted a leader interacting in there, working side by side?
Yeah.
What do you think happens then?
Well, the leader tends to think differently, I think, is what I see. So whereas these technical people tend to be good problem solvers on the technical issues, right? They know their field of expertise. But a lot of times the leader comes in and knows why we're doing it this way.
Right.
And they're not thinking that way. And with a little bit of influence about why we're doing it, all of a sudden when a challenge comes that they haven't dealt with or there's, they can now start to create solutions based on the why instead of just dealing with the what and the how. Right. I think that would be one.
Yeah, and that's a typical conflict we have in organizations because the technical people produce things that are technically right and technically beautiful. Mm-hmm. The world isn't always so linear, and so and there's other considerations. There's political things, there's money things, there's experience things that leaders bring on board, and technical people can get very upset and frustrated when their solutions aren't used because they're made in a technical box. when a leader comes in, they share that other stuff. And then what happens is that it enables that technical person to start seeing those things and to start accounting for them in their future work. And they've just grown, right? And no business leader wants their people making decisions in a myopic way that way. And they have no choice if that perspective isn't shared with them, right? And so injecting the leader into that multi-layer team, a working team, changes that perspective.
Yeah.
And gives a natural spot for mentoring.
So that's what you mean by collegial leadership then.
That the
manager's
exactly.
Carving out time for working side by side with those individual staff members.
Mm-hmm. But it's hard. I mean, how much time do you have? Are you a small business?
Right.
How hard is that?
Yeah, you'd have to really value that. You'd have to find a way to make that really pay off for, you know, productivity.
Yeah.
It sounds great in the long term, but, you know, you got to make payroll this month or this quarter. I think we've got a lot working against us. We've got the technology. We've got the social media. We've got the fact that we're being separated and working in different spots. This is really a culture shift for a lot. It seems like, you know, that's nice for you, but, you know, how do you actually make this happen in an organization? You're swimming upstream with this.
Yeah. So all of our management thought, all of our management systems, all of the way we look at things is we've kind of created management processes and production processes that say, this is for producing. Learning occurs over here.
Yeah.
And I think what I'm seeing and I'm suggesting, and I'm not the first to say this by any means, is that we make work a co-generative process where we design it to produce both work product and learning at the same time. And it means changing the way we work. And we've mentioned a couple of those ways. We change the way we design work. We make it more team-based that promotes learning, right? We come out of our offices or our cubes and we work with people. And that means, by the way, well, how do I get the work done that I was doing, the work of leading? Because I have things on my desk. My experience tells me a lot of those things on the leader's desk, the other folks can handle. And so a lot of that can be brought to the team. Yeah. And once you start sharing that wisdom with them and that perspective, they can do that stuff. Leaders tend to put a lot of monkeys on their shoulders, a lot of monkeys on them, but they don't need to. And so I think it's not always as hard as we anticipate it being. It's a challenge to be sure, but I think you're right. It does require rethinking, redesigning systems, and changing everything, the way we work. I think that's what we're up against for the future. I think that's a challenge.
But I think it's a lot of fun too. Like, it sounds like an interesting place to work.
Yeah.
If I get to work on a team
where
my contribution matters and I don't have to do everything about everything, and I get to learn from other people, and there's a leader that's building into my life, or I'm a leader that gets to share with those other people. And I don't know, that just seems like an interesting dynamic place to work.
And it is. And, you know, a place where a person who's junior can be smarter than the leader sometimes.
Yeah.
Many times. Right. And therefore is not afraid to be taught other times.
Yeah.
And it addresses part of the issue. We're always afraid of looking incompetent, you know, and it kind of addresses that issue. What if I'm competent in some areas and not? And we're all teachable, and it kind of helps foster that world. And that's the reality. We just hide that it's not.
Yeah.
You know, so it is exciting. I think it's exciting. And that's what I like. That's one of the challenges I like to help my clients with, is it's part of what gets me juiced.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I feel like I've learned a lot here about leadership and about acquisition of leader of wisdom and about mentoring.
I think we've just put words on stuff you've known already.
Well, any parting thoughts, something you would say to the organization that's really interested in this, but they're trying to get it started and they feel like there might be a culture change ahead of them?
Yeah, I think that give it a whirl, give it a try, experiment. If you have teams that are primarily people who are primarily kind of individual producers, I encourage you to start looking at doing it in team-based formats, maybe pilot, and don't be afraid of the resistance and pushback, but be encouraging to folks, be steadfast, and see where it takes you. It's an experiment.
Yeah, the learner mindset.
The learner mindset, exactly.
Yeah.
How about you? What do you want to say to folks based on your experience?
Well, I would challenge every small business out there to pick up at least one intern. I think it's worth bringing someone on that is, look for someone who's teachable, look for someone that's motivated, wants to learn, but certainly be willing to invest in them. And I would also say that a lot of the skills that a mentor needs come from, you know, coaching basically. So if you haven't been mentored and you want to mentor someone, one thing you could do is get a coach.
There you go.
Because a coach would model for you some of the same skills about letting the client have the agenda, seeing them as a creative, resourceful, whole person.
Exploring the thinking process.
Yeah, changing perspectives, playing, learning together. There's just a lot of that that goes on in mentoring. And I think that's what I've seen, a lot of crossover in those skills. And then, you know, if you're young and you want a mentor, I don't see any problem with just going out and asking for someone and say, look, I really respect you. You know, can we hang out together? I'd love to take you to lunch. I'd love to learn more about, you know, how you've got to where you are and how you make decisions. And I'd love to pick your brain on some things. Can we get together? I wouldn't worry about calling it mentoring or trying to make it some kind of official program.
I think that's wise.
Just have a relationship.
Yeah.
Who cares what you call it?
Right.
And see what you can give to that person and glean from them.
Okay. Well, there you go. Some wise words on mentoring. Ken, it's been a great conversation.
Yeah. Thanks for joining me.
All right. See you next time.